Jones Topsoil has been delivering topsoil, mulch, sand, and gravel. For greener lawns and brighter flower beds, call 1-800-TOPSOIL. Order online at jonestopsoil.com.
Jones Topsoil brings it home to you.
Come on!
Strong, the powerful Michelle Tinsley has returned to Lifeblood. Welcome back, Michelle.
Thanks, George. Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you back. Michelle is the co-founder and chief operating officer of Go Yellowbird. She's an investor, a director, advisory board member. Michelle, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. So after 26 years in corporate with Intel, I decided to kind of break out on my own, started a consulting practice, and quickly realized it's a lot of hard work and you're always looking for the next customer. So I pivoted, so to speak, and after 8 years of angel investing, decided I want to be a leader in a startup. And I've been fueled by the amount of progress and growth that happens in a startup, both with the business, but also personally. So I've just really enjoyed building up our company with Michael, and we're now in our well into our second year and really enjoying it. Outside of work, I have two boys and a husband that we love to do active sports together, hiking, mountain biking, and basically traveling when we can.
Nice. Well, so many different exciting things to talk about. I mean, because you spent 20 plus years with Intel, is that right?
Yeah, in a variety of functions. So I was one of those weird people that moved around. I did finance. I was a general manager. I was in product. And then the last year I moved into sales. So I got to try out a lot of different functions.
So do you think that really well prepares you for startup life, or is it nothing like that at all?
It did in a way in that you learn a lot of different functions. So you learned, I said it's, you're experimenting and you're keeping one thing the same, which is like the domain experience part of the company. For me, I spent over 15 years in the Internet of Things. And so I really got to know the customer base, the industry, how things worked. And therefore I could change up, you know, the day-to-day. Was I the one approving business plans and setting the strategic direction? Was I writing the business plans or was I off selling? You know, all those things, we kept the domain experience and the customer base the same. What's different is in a startup, there's just no structure. So day in and day out as a leader, I need to decide where am I going to spend my time, because that's my most precious resource. And as chief operating officer, I wear a lot of different hats. So, you know, it may be payroll for the first hour in the morning, HR hat. Then I go into financial mode because we're closing the books and reviewing what the accountants are sending us. And then it's a strategy session. Then it's people management. Then it's customer triage, you know, working with what's happening there, looking at how our sales is working, marketing lead gen efforts, maybe we have a marketing campaign on the way, and then do we do some networking or a virtual event? So the variety and the just figuring out how to get stuff done is really, to me, what fuels me in this startup, because we're looking now at expanding to a second country. And I was telling somebody over the weekend this, and they from Intel, and they said, well, how do you know? You know, who tells you? And I said, nobody tells you. You just have to research it and figure it out and phone a friend or an expert, you know, like an accountant or a lawyer in this space, and just get it done. You know, there's no appendix or manual where you can go look this stuff up and just follow it.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. How do you know? Like, well... You don't necessarily. It's just fundamentally, there's not really a right answer to the question.
Exactly. And it's being okay with, you know what, I went down this hole and it's not going to pan out. Let me back up and you know, retrieve a different path and try that angle.
Do you think that, so you just, you have a lifetime of experience and therefore wisdom that you've been able to sort of obviously obtain and training and learnings and everything else. So when you are having all these things thrown at you and you are sort of, for lack of a better term, going through a decision tree of this is what I'm going to be focusing on and this is what I'm going to set aside for later. How do you go through that process? Is it totally just innate at this point?
Well, I do. I love lists. I'm a planner by personality. And what I do is I have, you know, usually 10, 20 things on my big list of things I'd like to get to. Lately, as we're staffing up the business more, I'm starting to look at what are these things that I personally need to do, and which of these could I give to somebody else on the team to work. And maybe they've never done it before, but I can coach them through it. And now in the future, they can do it over and over again. So we have a summer intern who's a financial degree from ASU. He's entering his senior year in the fall. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to teach him how to do our invoicing of customers. And that way, when I take my vacation for a week, he can take over and have, you know, a second pair of eyes look him over before he hits send. But at least I now won't be the only one at the company doing customer invoices. So things like that where you go, okay, I don't personally need to long-term be doing this every time. But then there are some things like, you know, preparing and running the company strategy session that, yeah, that's pretty core to my job. And, you know, looking around at other startups and what models people have used and, you know, always challenging ourselves. Are we doing enough? Are we learning from the lessons that we have? No, by God, no, we're not perfect. But can we at least document the learnings we're getting and make sure we don't, you know, repeat the same mistakes second time?
It's a curious thing to me hear about how so many entrepreneurs just really love to solve problems and get things done, and so that therefore they end up doing way too much. Do you like doing, or does it come natural to delegate, or is it just that you recognize this is essential?
Yeah, I do love doing. I tell folks, you know, at the end of a week, I go to write our week. We still do like kind of a weekly synopsis of what got done. I just love, you know, the feeling of what we got accomplished this week is, I always joke, more than a month or a quarter of what I would have done in corporate, because we do have fewer meetings. We have time. And especially I did learn this at Intel. If I know there's something on my plate, like right now I'm going through some financial what if modeling in preparation for our Series A raise next, you know, later in the year. We want to see different varieties of revenue ramps, cash flow scenarios, margin assumptions, that kind of thing. Well, I need some time. So I'm going to just go block my calendar for 2 to 4 hours to really just have that immersive time that I could get into that. And then again, save the file in different, you know, scenarios, and then go back and review them with our CEO and say, which of these feels about right. But you knowing that you have to block that time out to really make sure that you don't get taken over by the tyranny of the urgent. Because yes, I leave every night and there's, you know, 20, 30 emails that I didn't get to yet. So there's, I said, if you manage your life by having an empty inbox, well, you'd never go home, you know, you'd never sleep. So it's just really figuring out which of these are the most critical and can I get to tomorrow. But knowing that, again, a lot of times our customers are much larger companies, they're going to be patient because they are operating at a slower pace, quite honestly. And so we do like to delight them and kind of have always, you know, if we're playing tennis, we're hitting the ball back and it's sitting on their side for 5 minutes before it comes back over to us. And we like that way because we want to be kind of the nimble, responsive company.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. So in terms of that, of there's just always going to be a limitless number of things and more things coming your way, and this concept of having, I don't want to call it balance, but just having some kind of a work-life balance, if that's a thing, I'll just ask the question, is that a thing, and how do you think about that?
I think, you know, it's never even parts. It's not like, well, I'll spend 25% of my time on self-care and 25% on the family and 25% on work and, you know, 25% on hobbies or whatever the other bit may be. It's more the some weeks, you know, the kids need you. Like we last week had 2 nasty grams from my older kid's teacher because he's not doing great in school because he's lackadaisical about turning in his assignments. So, you know, to us as parents, we had to have the sit down. And so there was more mental time and energy focused on the kids and getting them back on track and this last push, you know, to finish junior high than, you know, basically me working in the evenings. But I will, you know, leave work at, say, 4:30, 5 o'clock to go home and make a real dinner. You know, I call real dinner, you know, cooking from scratch, you know, not just microwaving leftovers, but knowing that I likely only do that 2 nights a week, and then we'll do leftovers the other nights. And then, so you flex and you figure, okay, if there's urgent things that needed to get done today, I'll do them, at 7, 8 o'clock at night after dinner. So you just trade things off. I think as you get more advanced in your career, you're more okay with just making those priority calls. I think earlier in the career, I remember very early on in my days at Intel worrying about could I get off of work to go see my sister's cross country track meet. And nowadays I kind of chuckle at that because I go, they wouldn't have cared. They again, as long as you get the work done, that's the litmus test. But being used to hourly working jobs where you're clocking in and clocking out, that was just very nerve-wracking to me that I'd leave work a few hours early one day knowing that I'd make it up elsewhere. And so, yeah, I think what's been interesting with the pandemic is with zero travel practically, there has been more of this time to think, time to really do the more intensive projects, spring cleaning at home, whatever you want to call it, because you're not stuck in an airport, reading your Kindle for 2 hours that you didn't plan on.
Right.
And so that's been kind of the joy of it. The bummer has obviously been not seeing folks, in person, and now some of that's starting to come back. So, looking at there will be in the future more time for this in-person networking, in-person socialization. And from a business perspective, I go, yay, maybe some return to in-person sales and the kind of traction that you get with building new customer relationships.
So when you get a nasty gram from your kid's school and it says that your son is not turning in his assignments, do you shake your fist at your husband? Because you don't seem like the person that wouldn't have been turning in assignments in school, Michelle.
This is again, I go, you get bits of every parent. And I'm not going to say it's, oh, Alan, but Alan is less of a planner than me. He's more of the things will come together. He was the guy that crammed in school and got the paper done eventually. But, my son's a bit like that. And I think just too, he's into the, well, who cares about grades? They're just a letter on the card. And I said, well, you can feel that way in junior high, but, high school's a few months away and it counts towards college. If your GPA is truly not great, I mean, this one class was an F, and I was like, my big frustration was he has so much aptitude and capability. If he truly was trying and he was, getting an F because he truly was failing because he wasn't learning, I would have been there to help him. This was more the, this is ridiculous. You should be getting an A in this class because, it was English. I was like, this is
Right.
the only non-advanced class you have that was supposed to be, quote, the easy class in your schedule to, so that we'd balance things out. And here you're practically failing it because you're, like practically asleep in the class. And so let's be more, in work life, I told him, man, I can't just, oh, well, turn in something to a customer a week later and say, oops, I forgot to do the last mile of hitting send on my email to you. That would not work. We wouldn't have that customer. And so, it's a little bit of let him sink a little bit now, knowing that again, the grades aren't that important in junior high, but he's got to start building the study habits that are going to keep him through high school and college.
It's just the most humanizing thing in the world, I think, having kids and going through this exercise.
Yeah, I
So,
mean, literally, and with online learning, of course, they changed everything. So it would be like, okay, I
right.
loaded it to Google Docs, but I didn't hit save. And so it's like, well, the teacher didn't see it then. And so, you got to do the very last step. You got to, double check. And it's starting to build into him that kind of feedback loop for himself. And then also teaching him how to advocate for himself with the teacher, to ask the first line of questions. You don't want mom and dad getting involved and writing the teacher back right away. You want to first go have a discussion with the teacher and say, how could I do better?
Yeah, amen. So you mentioned that you're going to be starting or going for the Series A round later this year. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically, as a brand new startup, obviously we're ramping up our revenues. What actually, grows quickly at the beginning is the expenses because you're starting to hire the team that can go do the execution and start scaling, especially for us under Anthony, our Chief Product Officer. We have a lot of developers coming on board and, working on scaling out our platform. Well, with that increase in cost comes an increased cash burn. And so, we look at it and go, we're fine right now, but you can project, 6, 12 months down the road, we would be potentially running out of cash. And so you, you know, as a company have to plan ahead and look at, okay, when do we think that might happen? Now let's back it up 6 months and start raising that next round of funding. And with Series A means we're moving from a convertible note, which is a debt instrument, to something that's equity. And so we'll now have priced shares of the company. And we'll be working largely with a different set of investors. This will be probably more like bigger angel groups, family offices, and or VC firms. And so it will be more diligence. You know, the initial round first that we did in early 2020 was a friends and family round, very little due diligence, because honestly, it was either people who bought into our vision and where we wanted to go as a company and the very early days of revenue traction. Now the current round we're in is a seed, and we're wrapping that up. And it's essentially, they're seeing the revenue scale, the valuation makes sense. There's some light due diligence, but nothing super heavy. I think as we get into Series A, it will be a lot more, you know, diving into our metrics, looking at our acquisition costs of both sides of the platform and saying, you know, can this thing scale to 10, 100x what we're doing today? And if so, what kind of investment does that require? What kind of market size is there to go after, and what kind of market share can we achieve? Because at the end of the day, these investors are going to want a return. And we have to give them that story of both the vision and the heart and the passion of where we're going, but also they're going to want to someday get, you know, 5 to 10x their return out of this business.
Nice. And how did you learn about all of this fundraising?
So that's where the angel investing comes in. So I started 8 years ago, largely because I always had tucked away in my back of my head a piece of advice I got in college from my advisor in my sorority. She said, Michelle, someday don't make this mistake that I did, which was I failed to invest in this company. The founder came to me, wanted $3,000 to start making shoes on a waffle iron. And I thought it just sounded like such a stupid idea. So I said no. It was Phil Knight. It was Nike. And to this day, I'm killing myself that I didn't, you know, invest. And so she said, when you become a successful business person someday, think of investing in the startups, because that's both where the real wealth appreciation is, but also it's very rewarding because you're helping these early stage companies with your business experience and your advice. So I just filed that away. And as I moved to Arizona and it became a general manager at Intel, I thought, okay, I should start thinking about 5-10 years down the road. Where do I see myself? I don't want to be at a corporate until I'm 65, you know, retiring to where then I'm really just sitting by a pool. I want to retire young. And in my mind, it was serve on boards and do angel investing. And as I started networking, actually, it's Kathy Lynn Culotta, who's a Golden Seeds angel here in Arizona. She said, well, Michelle, don't wait until you retire. You could be doing angel investing now. And I said, really? I thought I'd have to be writing million-dollar checks, and I'm not in that ballpark. And she said, no. A lot of these angel groups, you know, they want you to invest maybe $25,000 a year into this space. And there's many groups. Let me introduce you. So she introduced me to Jim Golka, who runs the Arizona Tech Investors Group. And what we invest in is tech. So it could be Internet of Things, it could be software, it could be medical tech, medical diagnostics we've seen, even biohealth, but it's all science. And so we've seen drones, we've seen, you know, lots of SaaS platforms. But it's fun because you see the variety of innovation that's happening. I would say over half the companies we look at are Arizona-based. The other half come from national other groups, other angel groups that syndicate. And again, we take the best of the best that come through our selection process. We've invested in companies as far away as Nova Scotia and lots of locals. And so I look at it and say, you learn how to value a company, what's important as an investor, because you're using your own money. Being part of a group, what it enables us to do is put in smaller bites. So we can go as small as $5,000 into one particular company. But what we teach people is you build up a portfolio then. So my husband and I, being 8 years in now, have pieces of 15 startups. And we've already had one good exit, which was Campus Logic. We got purchased off the cap table by their Series B investor. We got 6x what we put in. And then we've had two fail that we just literally write off the investment. It went to zero. And then we've had a few base hits. which is where we got just a little bit more than our money back. And so you look at how's the overall portfolio performing, because nobody's that good. But you know, as a couple, we are kind of learning which ones did we see. You know, like with the Campus Logic, it was a no-brainer because we love the founder. Greg Scoresby is an amazing guy, very talented, great leader. He was building up a dream team, and what they're doing is reinventing the way financial aid is handled. And so there's a very clear value proposition for both the universities and the students. And there's no one else doing what he was doing. So we kind of went, that's a great investment. We have others that we're equally excited about. And then there's some where you're like, I'm kind of confused what they're trying to do, and they're pivoting and they're kind of floundering. And so you just kind of go, oh boy. So as an angel, we get updates every, I'd say at least every quarter, sometimes more, like once a year, a deep dive, and give them advice or help, or offer them customer suggestions, introductions, so that again, you try to make your investment successful. So we're more active investors than, say, a passive institutional investor lately.
Awesome. What a cool experience. And certainly commend you for being so proactive and thoughtful about moving or becoming the general manager at Intel and then looking ahead at what you wanted your career to look like. And here you are making it happen. So I think that that's awesome.
And that's why I said, looking backwards, when I was in my very first job, I remember the first week on the job, I had to learn how to use a mouse, because in college, all I'd use was DOS. This is how old I am. DOS-based computers. No Windows or anything like that. And when I got to Intel, they were like, oh, good Lord, first just go in the corner and learn Excel, because I was used to Lotus, and use a mouse. I went from that, to 10 years later, being helping integrate a billion-dollar acquisition in Denmark, and teaching that CFO how to be a controller at Intel. And I would have never dreamed that I could have had that amount of learning and progression. And so I just look at that and say, that's, as we bring on new people at Yellowbird, we say that's what we want, is that lifelong learning, that hopefully you're doing a job 5 years from now you never thought you could do. You're doing things that are really stretching you, but you keep doing that day in and day out, year after year, you're going to be doing some pretty amazing gymnastics.
I love it. Well, Michelle, the people are ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
I think, I tell people, be your own best mentor, meaning have that self-talk be positive, and again, set goals that you're looking to achieve that might scare you, but you're going to really learn as you go through trying to achieve those goals.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
Michelle, thank you so much for coming back on. Where can people learn more about you? How can people engage with you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn as well as Twitter, as well as just in the startup scene here in Arizona. And I'm always open for a Zoom coffee or in-person coffee. So yeah, just reach out.
Love it. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Michelle your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. You can find her on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and I will list all those in the notes of the show. Thanks
Sounds
again.
good.
Thanks again,
Thanks,
Michelle.
George.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, as we are all in this together.
For over 100 years, Jones Topsoil has been part of your community, delivering topsoil, mulch, sand, and gravel. Slinger Jones, bringing it home to you. Whether you're planting a vibrant flower bed, growing your own vegetables, or giving your lawn a fresh start, be the envy of the neighborhood with topsoil and mulch from Slinger Jones. For greener lawns and brighter flower beds, call 1-800-TOPSOIL. Order online at jonestopsoil.com.
Jones Topsoil brings it home to you.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.